Good morning, and thank you for joining us. You're listening to Smart Talk with Robin and Al. We're here every Saturday. Al isn't here today, so I have a special guest as co-host, Janice Porter. Janice is a decades-long member of the American Association of University Women and has been involved in education policy, particularly as it impacts women and girls. She's retired from Maricopa County Library District, where she did children's programming.
Yes.
Yay. She also earned a master's degree from the Department of Language, Reading, and Culture in the College of Ed here, and later received her entered the doctoral program. And her specialty, again, real children's literature in classroom. I love that.
Thank you, Robin.
So, she's also been an advocate for schools and teachers for as long as I've known her, which is a long time. So, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
The Arizona legislature has seemed out of sync with the citizens of Arizona in poll after poll, and Arizonans keep saying, education's a priority, we need more money, and policymakers instead provide tax cuts and giveaways that ensure there is no significant increase in our state budget, and so we remain at about 48th, 49th, or 50th in school funding. In addition to the tax credits that Arizona gives, in 2008, Arizona voters passed a bill that requires a supermajority, two-thirds of the legislature must support any tax increase. The passage of that bill, along with the cuts to education due to the recession, along with the legislature not being committed to funding schools, has ensured our schools are severely underfunded with overcrowded classrooms, crumbly buildings with bad plumbing, and we have a difficulty retaining teachers. So Superintendent Kathy Hoffman was on the show a little while ago, and she pointed out that we only have 150 physics teachers in the entire state, and we have 200 school districts. And so we have some high school, entire districts have not a single physics teacher. So, in light of that, funding decisions for schools are made primarily up at the legislature. So we're inviting all the legislative candidates from LD10 to come on the show. All of them will be invited. All will be asked the same questions. But if we're not asking the questions you'd like to hear, give us a call at 520-790-2040. Thank you. So today we'll have the first of our candidates, Paul Stapleton-Smith and Stephanie Hamilton. First, we have Paul. And Paul is the chair of the Pima Area Labor Federation. Yes. And he's also an LD10 precinct committee person. And he is a member of the JTED Business and Industry Council. And if we get a chance, I'd like to ask you about that because it's a very successful and wonderful program. Oh, before we go any further, can you just say what JTED stands for?
Yes, JTED stands for the Joint Technical Education District. And it's represented by an elected board, and the council is drawn from industry. And we provide career and technical education. So
can you give us an example of two JTED programs?
Sure. There's a nursing program. There's an EMT program. I'll give you a third one. Also, there's an aviation program, which has had tremendous success recently.
Great. And they work in partnership with the districts.
Indeed, they do. So JTED maintains... our JTED district here in Pima County maintains its own central campuses, but then in addition, there are campuses in high schools that they maintain and are under the direction of the principals of each of those high schools.
Okay, wonderful. So now we're going to start with the questions. How should Arizona schools be funded?
Arizona schools should be funded in a manner that is direct and not subject to the whims of the legislature. We need funding that's dedicated funding, reliable funding, and that has built-in adjustments, both for inflation and for a growing population. That's something that folks tend to forget, is our state continues to grow, the population of students continues to grow, and we've got to be able to have very simple formulas that our superintendents and that our principals can count on to fund their schools on an ongoing basis. Right now, The legislation is the way our legislature handles it under the direction of our governor is subject to the whims and fancies and constantly changes. And it's unnecessarily complicated and it's extraordinarily unreliable from year to year.
Okay. One of the examples of it being complicated and inequitable is that 15% of the student population is assumed to have a learning disability. So the money for learning disabilities, the first pot of it, every school gets 15%, whether they have zero kids with special needs or 100%. And that is complicated and not really just.
And Paul, given the fact that some of this is done at the whim of the legislature, and the fact that bills don't even make it to committee if Republicans don't want those bills heard, so they don't come to a vote, they don't come to committee, how would you work with Republicans in the legislature to try to open up some of that, some of those bills, to try to move some of that forward?
So, Janice, in terms of not all of our Republicans in our legislature are anti-public education. Unfortunately, the majority has been that way, and it's been going that way for several years in an attempt to privatize our public schools. So working with the other side is, one, recognizing that the children and grandchildren that these legislators have in public schools deserve better and a fair and full funding of their schools. We're seeing some of those sort of chickens come home to roost, where they're realizing that in their home districts, and the hue and the cry, the protest, Red for Ed, has persuaded many of them to shift their alliances away from the privatizing of public schools and their majority leadership. They're much more amenable to compromise. We also have narrower majorities. It's my belief, with the organizing and registration of new voters and our Get Out the Vote efforts, we're going to see a greater pressure on those legislators to listen to the cries of the teachers and to the agenda of Red for Ed, which is absolutely a statewide movement. They're more amenable to compromise, and as we get more Democrats elect, in this case, Democrats elected to office, from a legislative standpoint, they'll be forced to compromise on issues that previously we haven't been able to do from a parliamentary standpoint.
Thank you.
So what are your priorities in running? They can be big or small. What three issues, big or small, do you want to pursue?
Well, with the legislature? Fully funding and staffing our public schools is paramount. It benefits not only our communities and our families, but also our economy, ultimately. I'm fortunate that I get to serve on a commission for several years at the Department of Education that oversees all career and technical education programs, with Kathy Hoffman now as the chair of that commission. We also need to do a much better job in this prosperous economy, this heralded booming economy, of making sure that the jobs that we have in Arizona are good jobs, that they're not low-quality jobs. We've got to raise salaries and benefits. In that regard, as the chair of the Pima Area Labor Federation, AFL-CIO, have a unique seat there. I also serve on the Workforce Investment Board here in Pima County, where we oversee all of those employment opportunities. And it's clear that we can have better policies regarding employment, employer rules, and stopping the misclassification of workers. That's a very important
objective
for me.
What do you mean miscalculation?
Misclassification of workers is something that has been happening across the country at really the direction of the Koch Brothers Network and ALEC here, American Legislative Exchange Council in Arizona, where what we do is we simply change the definition of what we call a worker, allowing employers to escape having to follow the rules of employment. and we can pay them less. We can
so that can be regulated. That can be legislated in the House, in the House legislature.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, simply changing the classification of a worker allows employers to rake off profits at the expense of the worker and their family. And we can do much better. There's other issues in terms of scheduling. The notion that we could have laws that say that you need to be able to know what your work schedule is a week in advance, 2 weeks in advance, that allows you to have a family and to lead a life of you know, some dignity and control. In addition, of course, safety. The last thing I would say about that on the worker side is Arizona is noted for its position legislatively in rolling back and eliminating safety regulations on the job. So we've got workers that are being hurt and injured because we don't have an appropriate level of protections for them in the workplace.
So I'm going to go ahead.
You mentioned the Koch brothers, Paul. What's your stand on the Koch Foundation funding the so-called freedom schools at ASU, U of A, and now NAU, where they essentially design the curriculum and direct the program?
I've been very active for several years in making sure that we get the Kochs off campus, which is the name of one of our coalition partners. It's unconscionable that we allow the so-called freedom centers to be funded once again with public tax dollars, with virtually no oversight, and allowing them a space and a place in our public universities where they clearly don't belong, and they're not accountable to the voters or to the citizens of our country or our state.
Okay. We are going to take a quick break, and we will be back. We're talking with Paul Stapleton Smith, and sitting on my other side is Janice Porter, who's the co-host today. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm here this morning with co-host Janice Porter and Paul Stapleton Smith, who is with the Pima Area Labor Federation and also a candidate for LD10. So, Paul, can you explain, you were talking about how classifications of jobs impact workers, or classification of workers impact workers' lives. How about that? Can you give us an example?
Absolutely. So we have this sort of myth, this new term, the gig economy, with services like Uber and Lyft, where employers, for example, Uber, claim that they're not actually employers, that they're a technical platform, and therefore they don't have to pay payroll taxes, the employer share of Social Security, and they don't have to treat their employees, the drivers, as an actual employee. That allows them to escape all federal regulations, all of our state regulations. Recently, California did an amazing job and prevented with a bill there, prevented these employers from escaping their responsibilities and essentially deceiving not only themselves but taking advantage of you know, not having to be required to have any responsibilities as an employer. There's a big pushback from Uber, Lyft, and the other services like that who absolutely irresponsibly maintain that they're not actually employers, when indeed they are. According to all of our tests and to common sense, the truth is that employers have to follow rules and regulations.
So the legislature here could regulate that?
Absolutely. Arizona could and should be regulating that.
I wanted to ask you also about, in Arizona, we have a third grade reading test. It's like a high-stakes tests for third graders. And this was put into being by the state legislature, and I wanted to know what your thoughts about that were.
So the entire imposition of high-stakes testing onto our young people is not research-based, it's not scientific, there's no data to support that this high-stakes testing, wherein there are penalties, implicit and explicit, that punishes both the school in their funding formulas and tracks that child, that young person. It's unconscionable that we're doing that to our young folks. We know better about learning.
Okay, thank you. We have a caller. Greg is on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Robin and Paul and Janice. You know, as you were describing that, Paul, I was thinking of the Bakke decision. There's a famous case. Are you all familiar with the Bakke Supreme Court decision?
Yes.
Yes, but why don't you tell people for the...
Okay.
Or do you want to...
I will. Some years ago, a gentleman tried to enter medical school who was white, and he was rejected in favor of a black wannabe medical student. And he sued. And what's interesting is that this diversity thing is just so ludicrous, because as it turned out, Bakke went on to go to medical school, was very successful as a doctor, whereas the other student, the black gentleman, they stripped him of his license because people were not, there were some issues with how he was treated. I would rather see what it is that the Koch brothers are offering, because to reject their entrance on campus out of hand, it's just like the right saying George Soros, well, he's just a liberal and he's no good for the world and this and that. I'd like to know what the facts are. And lastly, this test that you were just talking about, the third grade test, why don't we learn from Germany, where I understand that a student, I'm not sure the age, might be 10 or 12 or 13, they see what direction they're going to go. In other words, some students are not academically motivated and might be better off learning a trade. Whereas here, there are some who would say, oh, you want to exclude these folks from an education, that's unfair. No, it's fair, because let's find out what they're qualified for when they're 10 or 11 or 12, and let's gear them on that track.
So, Greg, I'm going to butt in just for a second before I hand it over to Paul. My nephews are German. They've grown up in Germany and attended German schools. And I used to think that the United States did not have the stomach for that system. To determine at 10 or 11 what your future earnings are going to be just seems... I thought Americans would rise up against this and say, no way. We tend to be headed that way, I think, right now, that we will have this two-tiered system, one for, you know, kids who are more academic and one for kids who are interested in trade. But really, would you have wanted in fourth or fifth grade for your teachers to decide this is where you belong? You know, kids learn at different rates.
Well, if you're asking me personally, Robin, let me tell you that in fourth or fifth or sixth grade, I knew I wanted to be in broadcasting, and I also was interested in law. So at Tucson High School, learning geometry and trigonometry, I had no interest in it. I was frustrated with it. And it isn't the school deciding, because the child will be listened to and their interests will be told. And we have to listen to the kids, because this idea that, oh, it's good to have this general education for everybody, I think I like the German way better. But how are your nephews doing? Are they older now? Did they go through that that sort of a system?
They did. Now, keep in mind that both of their parents are college educated, and one of them is American and speaks perfect English, and the mother was an English teacher. So they had a benefit to schools anyway. So they were chosen for what's called gymnasium, which is the high level,
right.
And have good lives. But there are other kids. Once you're in that system, it's very hard to transfer to the other. But I'd like to hear Paul's thoughts about, there were two questions there. One is on the Kochs, and one is on this keeping the third grade reading score and determining in when kids are 10 or 11 where they should go.
Yeah, Greg, and I appreciate the way that you framed that. This is not about being closed-minded. It's just the opposite. It's about being open-minded. It's knowing that in the third grade, the emotional impact of having this this high-stakes testing wherein kids are going to be tracked based on their performance when they're not prepared. And again, there's no data, there's no science, there's no experience that suggests that this is important or necessary. The teachers can make decisions based on their relationship with the child. That's something we can't remove. And this notion that we can have a strict formula for every child, and if you don't fit into one of these squares in the third grade and in success and in succeeding grades because you're a square peg in a round hole, is not something that helps our people. And it certainly doesn't resonate with teachers. When we go and talk to teachers, I have lots of relationships with teachers. I do professional development courses for teachers. And it's their relationship with their young people, with their students, and being able to adapt a learning environment, right? We're all different, Greg. You're going to be different from Janice and different from Robin in how you apprehend and how you learn. We've got to have that flexibility built in. So moving on quickly to the Koch side, you said something, I'd like to learn more about it. Good luck with that. If you hold this Freedom Center at the University of Arizona or NAU or ASU, try to hold them responsible, they won't give you records and information and data. It's been a tremendous effort on the part of our activists and our coalition members to try to learn what they do, why they do it. And in the end, one of the things that was really startling was that they're generating curriculum that they don't want to share with the public. And then pushing those into our public schools without review. So again, the central thing is accountability. So trying to find out what they're actually doing with our tax dollars in our campus is something that has been so difficult that I'm over it. They don't deserve to be in our campus and use our dollars if we can't know exactly what they're doing and why they're doing it.
So thank you, Greg, for calling. We appreciate your question. And I wanted to ask one other question of you, Paul, and that is, why did you decide to run for office? I mean, you have this amazing resume and have done all this stuff. Not that people with amazing resumes shouldn't run, but what made you decide that you wanted to be part of the legislature?
So for many years, for 10 years, I've been serving on the legislative committee, our AFL-CIO legislative committee, where we track every bill that goes through the legislature, and we work with our legislators to amend and create a strategy around our legislative agenda. And I recruit candidates to run for office. And so this time, as I was recruiting candidates to run for offices up and down the ballot, the AFL-CIO came to me and said, you know, it would be a lot more effective if you ran yourself and would be an example. Based on the work that I have done, the work that I do, and the relationship that I have with legislators, I'm fortunate I get to work with them every week, and this is a job that I feel requires a commitment beyond any of the corporate donations and based on moral principles. This is a time for us to fight back. It's a time for us truly in this country and in this state to stand up and fight back. And I'm in a position to do that in my life and with my family.
Wow. Well, thank you for coming on. Janice, do you have one last question that can be answered in a minute and a half? Go ahead.
What would you do if you're opposed, as I am, to the third grade reading test? What would you let teachers do in their classrooms to decide where those children should be putting their energies?
Allowing teachers to perform their evaluations and to use their experience and their training to guide a child's education program is simply the very best and time-tested way to educate our young people.
Okay, on that note, thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it. You've been listening to Paul Stapleton Smith, who is a candidate in Legislative District 10. We're going to go for a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Stephanie Hamilton. Thank you. Directly and dare. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk, and I'm your host, Robin Hiller, and the co-host today is Janice Porter. Thanks for coming in. And I just want to reiterate, we were talking about funding decisions for schools are made primarily up at the legislature. So in light of that, we're inviting all the legislative candidates from LD10 to come on the show. Everyone will be invited. everyone's going to be asked the same questions. But if we're asking questions and you have others you'd like to hear the answer to, please call at 790-2040. That's 520-790-2040. We've just heard from Paul Stapleton Smith, and now we have Stephanie Hamilton. So thank you, Stephanie, for coming in. Stephanie Hamilton is an Arizona native. She's been married to a middle school teacher in TUSD for 21 years, and she went away to receive her master's of divinity at Princeton Theological Seminary, and she returned afterwards to Arizona to make Tucson her home. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we have a set of questions that we're asking everyone, and here they go. So how should Arizona schools be funded?
Well, our Constitution says that they should be funded through taxpayer dollars, and that money should go only to public education, and that public education should be as near as free as possible.
And so where would you recommend the money come from?
Where would I? Yeah, from our taxpayers. Absolutely. Uh-huh. It is our job in our state to invest in our future, and I don't know any better investment than putting that money into our children.
Okay, so right now we use sales tax, a variety of different things. Your recommendation is the money would come from the same pots, just bigger.
Just bigger. Well, it does come from some of our property taxes, right? Uh-huh. There's a formula. There used to be more money coming to us from the feds. I mean, there's lots of buckets from where this money comes. And, you know, our legislature has made a step of also allowing money to come from tax credits and tax credit donations. And that is not a very equitable way of funding our education. And while it can be helpful for some people, I don't think that it helps all of our schools in a way of distributing money to the schools who need it the most. And so I'd like to see something, I don't know how much we would be able to do about that, but it is not an equitable way of funding education. And I would like to look and work for more equitable ways of funding our schools.
Mm-hmm. So when you decided to run, what were the three, like, I'm sure there are a multitude, but what were the three issues? They can be big or small, or three issues that you want to work on in the legislature.
Well, first and foremost is education. Mm-hmm. I am the wife of a public school educator, the daughter of educators who began their teaching careers in Arizona. My husband is a third generation public school teacher here in Arizona, and I have three children coming up through the public school system. I've been an involved parent with my children's education from day one, and when I realized that most of the funding decisions came from the legislature, that's when I really started leaning in and becoming even more active as an advocate up at the legislature through a couple of different groups. So for sure, education is my top priority. You know, I was hired by Save Our Schools to get out that no vote on Proposition 305, mm-hmm. which was to stop the bill that was passed into law for the voucher expansion. And I was regional lead for all of Southern Arizona to get word out about how our funding works and some of the ways in which laws were being passed that would drain money from our public schools. So for sure, I'm very passionate about investing in all of our children. So that comes to us through education, public mm-hmm. school education, number one. Number two, affordable and accessible health care mm-hmm. for our young people, for our children. That has probably been the number one challenge for me and my family. since we came back to Arizona 16 years ago, and that was being able to provide affordable, accessible healthcare for my own kids. And I have three very active children who are athletic, involved in sports, who spend a fair amount of their time outside being active and playing. And it's a hard thing when you have to look at your child and say, yeah, we can't go to urgent care because we can't pay the bill. So that is an area where we are not also not investing in the future of our state by investing in our children. So healthcare is another arena. I did some contract work for Children's Action Alliance last year, Southern Arizona Children's Action Alliance. Children's Action Alliance was looking for ways to help teacher retention. And one of the areas that kept coming up was providing health care for dependents of educators. And so they partnered with five school districts, and we went and talked to their HR and their insurance reps to see if there were district employees whose children could benefit from our Kids Care program, which is Arizona's low-cost health care program for children. And what we learned with that is that the indexing for Kids Care is too small. The indexing doesn't go high enough to make a difference for our families.
Can you explain what indexing is?
That's the income limit. So, so for access, the limit goes to a certain point, and then there's a small little window of income guidelines for families whose children would qualify for Kids Care, and it's. For some of our educators, when that 20 by 2020 supposed raise came through, it knocked some of our teachers' dependents off of access. If you can believe that, that's what we're paying our educators to raise their families. And so for those families, their children qualified for Kids Care. But then we had educators whose children were on Kids Care, and because of that minor bump in salary, it knocked their children off of Kids Care. So again, if we are not addressing the needs of our children, we are not addressing the needs of our community. And when we address the needs of our children, it affects the community, which, you know, it affects those families, our community, it affects the future of our state. So tied in with investing in our children through education, also looking at health insurance, affordable, accessible, quality health insurance for our children. And then there are several minor, and that would be, I'm looking at sensible gun safety laws. We're looking at climate change. So those are some of the issues.
Okay, great. Janice, you have a question.
Yeah, Stephanie, given that the legislature holds the purse strings for education and that the majority makes the rules and there are lots of bills that don't even come to committee because they won't allow it, how would you work with Republicans in the legislature to move your agenda forward?
Yes, and that's a really good question. And I think part of the answer to that is having to reach across the aisle, foster those relationships, know who are the education-friendly Republicans in office. The other thing is there are some areas of common ground. One of the areas which could have quite a bit of traction is our JTEB program and our CTE programs. There's some funding that was removed from those programs, and it has had a detrimental effect to our schools as far as receiving extra funding. And that's an area where I would focus on. And for sure, reaching across the aisle, knowing what's important to the people up there. And there are those Republicans who are education friendly, who would like to see our schools fully funded as well. And it's a matter of finding the common ground, finding what piques their interest, starting there, and then seeing where we can take it.
Thank you.
I have a quick question before the break, and that is, Arizona has a high-stakes third-grade reading test, and what do you think of this test? Are you familiar with the test?
Okay, so I know that it's been there for a while and that that's been a metric for which it's been used for either retaining children or moving children forward.
To clarify for the listeners, the third grade reading test, if the third graders do not pass it, they are retained. This isn't a decision made by the teachers or the school. This is a decision. Law passed by the legislature.
Yeah. And the thing of it is that I don't think we should ever pass a law without, especially when it comes to what happens in the classroom, unless we're in the classroom understanding, unless we've talked to educators, unless we've talked to even our reading specialists. Children's brains develop at different rates. They catch on to reading at different times in their lives. Not everybody develops on the same trajectory. And to arbitrarily say third grade, that's it. And to retain a child for one skill set, I think it is very detrimental to a child. I think if anything, tests should be indicators of where a child is and where a child needs more supports, where a child needs more challenges. That's the data we should be reading and interpreting. But for lawmakers to make a law when they are not the educators in the classroom, they're not the specialists, they're not the ones understanding brain development and growth and development, I have a hard time with that. And it's something that I hope I will be very sensitive to when I'm in office, that I will know the people to speak with before making up my mind on a law such as that. To me, I don't like it, and I think it's very detrimental to our children and to our families.
Thank you. We are going to go for a quick break, and we're speaking with Stephanie Hamilton, who is running for legislature in LD10. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm your host, Smart Talk with Robin and Al. I'm your host, Robin Hiller, today. And every day, actually, my name is Robin Hiller. That did come out confusing. Our co-host is Janice Porter, who is an educator and a reading specialist and a specialist in children's literature. We are speaking with Stephanie Hamilton. We spoke earlier with Paul Stapleton Smith. Both of them are candidates for LD10 for the legislature in the House. And we are inviting all of the legislators in that group, in those campaigns, to come in and talk to us and answer the same questions. Okay? So, you were going to ask what should happen.
If you don't have a reading test, if you don't have a kind of drop dead, this is what happens, what would you do, Stephanie? What happens instead to that third grader?
Well, again, I think you do have to evaluate where children are and what their skills. So I think identifying skill sets and then pouring the resources into them to help them learn how to read. My mother was a reading specialist, and she spent many of her summers tutoring children in reading. And, you know, at dining room table, children would arrive and she would have several students that she worked with throughout the summer. And lo and behold, by the end of the summer, those children were reading at grade level. It took just some extra time and an educator who figured out what those children were interested in and then invited them to learn more about that by reading and figuring out how to read. It took just a little bit of focus, and it was amazing what that extra tutoring did for those children and making reading coming alive. And then as they got excited about reading, their abilities as students increased.
One of the things with this program is that, this is what I've heard from principals, is that it goes a lot of times to outside agencies who have volunteers who come in. And I know there's two districts that require the volunteers to work with the highest level of readers and the teachers to work with the children who are struggling with reading. But most districts don't have that policy, and it gets used in a different way. It goes for the people with the least skills helping the children who have the most need. Janice is going to...
Oh... Yeah, when we're talking about a limited pot of money for education, and some of that money is going to the Koch-funded, Koch-partially funded, and now lots of state money, to the so-called freedom schools at ASU, U of A, and NAU, how do you feel about that, Stephanie?
it makes me irate is how I feel. And what I think about that is fueled by my anger. It's a hard thing because for me to be calm and rational and think my way through this, but it is something that we need to think our way through. I know initially when I realized this was happening, my first thought was, well, why doesn't the university president just refuse the money? Why do we have to have these schools? Can we not return it? But there are people who think along the same lines as the Koch brothers. And so here we have a very difficult situation. And how are we going to think our way through this? It makes me angry. I do not think that competition is always the best metric for producing the best results. I think the best way to produce results is to put our resources where they are needed the most. And to, we are only as strong as our weakest link. And so if we have children who are struggling, we put our resources there. We put our finances where they're going to do the most good. And when we elevate all of our young people and all of our children, we strengthen the future of our society. And so this idea of money only going for the best, in a way of competition, goes against the grain of everything I stand for.
Thank you.
So it sounds like you're talking about results-based funding also?
Yes.
And that is what they have found, is that the results-based funding, which is additional money for schools, so schools are desperate to get it, is going to the schools with the highest income of parents. And
well, there does seem to be a correlation on test scores, on those results, that the students that receive the most supports at home tend to thrive the best in school. Tend to. These are, you know, this is just a correlation. It's not across the board, end of discussion. But the environments with the most resources, those children tend to do the best. So the environments where our children don't have access to all the resources, that's where the money needs to go. Our children who already have so much don't need to be rewarded with more. It shouldn't be a reward situation. This is about education. This is about igniting the mind of a child to be curious, to investigate, to want to learn.
And well, it's also kind of insulting to teachers of, we're going to give you extra money if these test scores come up. And it's like, do they think teachers have been holding back with the good ideas? You know, oh, now that I might get a bonus, I'm going to bring out my A game.
Absolutely. And what I have learned as I have also been a substitute in TUSD, and what I have learned as I've gone into the schools, we got incredibly talented teachers who work awfully hard during the school day and then after, and then in the summer. They care about their students. This is more of a vocation, more of a calling than it is a job. This is where they belong, and I have seen teachers with every fiber in their body. They couldn't be anything but a teacher, and they are pouring into our children. And to determine a child's future based upon a test is the wrong approach to education. That's not education.
And one of the studies, or some of the studies, have said that it's on failure. It's not on a high-stakes test, this particular study, but it's on failure. That kids who are held back, their chance of not graduating from high school increases by 80%. And also, it's traumatic for kids to be held back, that it's very stressful. And on the stress level, it's right below death of a parent, because it's hard on the kids with their peers and everyone, that they are stuck and not moving forward, and it doesn't help in the end. as a reading specialist, Janice?
Well, when I first discovered that it was one of the high-stakes tests, I don't remember which one now, probably about 10 years ago.
And Ames, maybe?
Probably. And a teacher friend of mine was administering it, and she was being very careful to follow all the rules. And when we discovered that there were special sets of bags for the children to vomit into if they were so ill that they threw up before or during this test because of the stress, I decided if people hadn't already understood that those tests are not a good idea, that should have been the last straw.
Mm-hmm. This is a story. I have a daughter who's a teacher, and she told me when she was administering the test that there was a boy in her class who had a father who'd been in and out of prison, who had drug issues, who didn't speak English. The mother did not speak English. And the mother and child, the mother had mental issues, and they'd been moving around. They'd never stayed longer than 2 weeks in any house since he was born. And she's giving him this test, and she had a third grader at the time, and she goes, my third grader, this child is competing with a third grader who has two college-educated parents, who speak English, who's lived in the same house all his life, who's had books read to him every day in the language the test is in. And she said, how do we expect those kids without any additional supports to blossom or flower giving them those tests? We don't expect that. We expect to keep them and not give them any additional funding to help them learn to read. So we're wrapping up. Do you have anything you would like to say that we've missed?
Oh my goodness. Well, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. As you can tell, I am very passionate about the youngest in our population, and that I believe our children need to be told if they can't or they feel like they can't. I think they need to be told that's not a you can, it's a not yet. And I think so many of the policies that come out of our legislature, if not checked by the schools and the people they're wanting to serve, don't do our children any favors, and that there should be and can be a better relationship for that. And that is certainly something I will be bringing with me, a lens from which I operate when I'm elected to the legislature. Thank you.
No, I'm just interested, once again, in the reading portion of it about how you feel about school libraries and what importance do you put on the fact that many schools don't have a certified librarian or very many books on the shelves?
Yeah, that is an area, again, where we are failing our children. Books are, you know, that's if you can't read, you know, if you don't have the tools to put, and we need as much as possible to capture all the minds and the different learners and the different thinkers.
So one quick last one. Arizona gives away $13 billion a year in tax credits, and our state budget is a little over $11 billion. I mean, how can this be addressed in...
Well,
48 seconds.
The resources are there. We need to close those tax loopholes. We need to insist that businesses that come into our state be required to give back to the community. I think that can be a part of the conditions of their contracts when they're negotiating coming and moving to Arizona. I think it should be a requirement that if you are going to settle here, that you're going to give back to the community. And I think there's some ways that we can go after some of that money.
Well, one thing is that there should be an analysis to see if they're doing even Arizonans any good, and because a lot of the tax credits benefit out-of-state people, which just seems crazy, especially when our schools are struggling so much. So I would like to thank you for coming on, and we've been speaking with Stephanie Hamilton, and she is a candidate for Legislative District 10 in the House. There is an open seat, and because the senator retired, and so the other legislator is now running for Senate, so there's an open seat, and Stephanie is one of the candidates that we'll be talking to. So I want to thank you for coming on, and Janice, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Robin.
And I hope you'll come back and talk about children's literature in the classroom.
I'd love to.
Okay. So thank you. We'll be back next week. And thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Smart Talk with Robin and Al. Bye.